I'm Stephen Pythman. Welcome to Connections. If the words march music put you in mind of brass bands or military parades, you may have a surprise coming, for composers have turned out some remarkable marches for orchestra, piano, organ and brass, even voices. In the next hour, music in 4/4 time by Mozart, Beethoven, Schubert, Verdi, and Granger, among others, including one that you've probably marched to yourself, possibly more than once. It's true that march music began with the military. The word itself comes from the term to mark, as in mark time. Following a drum beat kept troops moving in unison, making military maneuvers more precise and efficient. Most marches weren't written down until the late 16th century. Until then, time was generally kept by percussion alone, often with improvised flute embellishments to soften the drum's monotony. With the extensive development of brass instruments in the 18th and 19th centuries, marches became widely popular as entertainment and were often elaborately arranged for various combinations of instruments. An example is the Prince of Denmark's March, written around 1700 by English composer Jeremiah Clarke in honor of Prince George of Denmark, husband of Queen Anne of Great Britain. The earliest manuscript for the piece is for keyboard, so it's thought that it may well have been intended for the organ. Here it is in a full-blown arrangement for organ, brass, and percussion. Organist Michael Murray with the Empire Brass in the Prince of Denmark's March by Jeremiah Clarke. Marches can be quite slow when needed, as with Henry Purcell's famous march from the funeral of Queen Mary of England from 1695, performed now by the Oxford Camerata. George Friedrich Handel wrote a number of slow marches for funeral scenes in his operas and oratorios, but most of his efforts in the form were celebratory, although at a tempo that would emphasize the majesty of the setting. Kevin Mallon led the Aradia Ensemble in the march from Act 3 of Rinaldo by George Friedrich Handel from 1711. The inherently dramatic impact of a march was clear to Handel and to Mozart, who included processional music in many of his operas. Outside the theater, however, virtually all his marches were composed as introductions to serenades or divertimentos. The reason is simple. It was customary for the musicians performing such works to march to the place where the music was to be played. Mozart's March in D was written to serve this introductory function for the large-scale Hofner Serenade, composed for the July 1776 marriage of Siegmund Hofner, the son of a Salzburg merchant and dignitary. Johannes Wildner conducted the Capella Istropolitana in Mozart's March in D. The title makes it clear just what kind of piece it is, but marches are sometimes tucked away inside larger works, often in movements marked something like Alla Marcia, but just as often they're just there, as in the opening of the second movement of Beethoven's Seventh Symphony, which in the score is marked simply as Allegretto. The opening of the second movement of Beethoven's Symphony No. 7 was performed by the Chamber Orchestra of Europe, conducted by Nicholas Harnoncourt. While Beethoven and Mozart call for larger forces, marches come in all sizes, as in Franz Schubert's Marche Militaire for Piano Duet. pianists Yanou Yondo and Zsuzsa Kolar in the Marche Militaire No. 1 by Franz Schubert, written during his stay at Count Johann Karl Esterhazy's summer home, where he served as music teacher to the Count's daughters. Tchaikovsky's delightful Marche Miniature has a delightful childlike quality that looks ahead to the sound world of the Nutcracker 12 years later. Antal Durati led the new Philharmonia Orchestra in the Marche Miniature from Tchaikovsky's Suite No. 1 for Orchestra. And now, moving from miniature to full-blown spectacle, the triumphal scene from Giuseppe Verdi's Aida features orchestra and chorus, and an onstage parade of soldiers and exotic livestock.
Thank you.
Lamberto Gardelli led the chorus and orchestra of the Royal Opera House Covent Garden in the triumphal scene from Aida by Giuseppe Verdi. In a moment, marches for a king, a widow, and the one that you have probably marched to yourself. I'm Stephen Pythman. You're listening to Connections from Capital Public Radio. I'm Stephen Pythman. This is Connections. When it comes to orchestral marches, one by Edward Elgar may be the best known and best loved, even if most people don't know the composer's name. Elgar was hard at work on writing his Cockaigne Overture when he was stopped in his tracks by a melody that seemed to come out of nowhere. "A tune like that comes once in a lifetime," he said later. "So how and where to use it?" The answer came from a line in Shakespeare's Othello: "The royal banner and all quality, pride, pomp, and circumstance." Elgar quickly finished the first pomp and circumstance march in the summer of 1901, explaining, "Why should I write a fugue or something that won't appeal to anyone when the people yearn for things that can stir them?" The pomp and circumstance march number one has been stirring people for well over 100 years.
Thank you.
Alexander Gibson led the Scottish National Orchestra in Pomp and Circumstance March No. 1 by Edward Elgar. His march took Great Britain by storm, prompting a vocal version called Land of Hope and Glory that soon became a patriotic favorite. And in the United States, it has become the graduation march in high schools, colleges, and universities. The sense of national pride is strong in Elgar's march. It's also behind much of the work of Finnish composer Jean Sibelius, who held his country's Karelia province in particular esteem. In his earlier years, he had found inspiration in his folk music, and later he was to spend his honeymoon there. In the Karelia Suite, published in 1906, he combines a full-out march with a secondary skipping theme on the violins. Neville Marriner led the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields in the march from the Karelia Suite by Jean Sibelius. Edward Elgar's Pomp and Circumstance March No. 1 took on new meaning because of its use in graduation exercises. The march from Sergei Prokofiev's 1921 opera, The Love for Three Oranges, gained new popularity in the 1940s and 50s as the theme music for the radio program The FBI in Peace and War. Thank you. Lorne Mazel led the National Orchestra of France in the march from Sergei Prokofiev's 1921 opera, The Love for Three Oranges. British composers have a flair for the orchestral march, and, like Elgar's Pomp and Circumstance, William Walton's Crown Imperial alternates two contrasting themes, adding both variety and substance. Andre Previn led the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra in William Walton's Crown Imperial, written for the coronation of King George VI in 1937. An orchestral march has a certain heft that can't be duplicated, but that didn't stop composer Percy Grainger from advocating the use of what he called massed pianos to create an orchestral quality. One of those pieces, the Widow's Party March, was written for his mother's 47th birthday in 1908. The opening theme is typical of Grainger's ability to write a melody with a certain cheekiness while still having great charm, so charming, in fact, that it's not obvious that it's a march at all.
Thank you.
The Widow's Party March by Percy Grainger was performed by Penelope Thwaites, Wayne Marshall, and John Lavender. The best-known marches of the past 50 years have come from the movies, including nearly every film scored by composer John Williams. Williams has the rare gift of combining orchestral styles of composers like Richard Strauss and Eric Korngold with the capabilities of modern instruments and recording technology. It seems fitting to end today's program with one of his most famous creations. John Williams conducted the London Symphony Orchestra in the march from his score for Raiders of the Lost Ark. Researchers have found music listening and playing can have a profound effect on social cohesion. And what is more cohesive than a march? Whether you're in a parade or a graduation procession or just sitting in a chair tapping your feet, as Edward Elgar said, people yearn for things that can stir them. I'm Stephen Pythman, inviting you to join me again for Connections. Recording engineer was Mark Jones. Connections is a production of Capital Public Radio.